Welcome, everybody. This is the second conference call for RM-102, which is Document to Manage Risk. I'd like to acknowledge that today I'm not at home, but I'm hosting this call from the unceded territory of the Chisala or Seashelt Nation. So I'm down on the wet coast. It is raining today. So welcome and thanks for joining us. What we'll do before we get into it is I just would like to do introductions because although Angela is familiar with the REC North program, Kelsey and Megan, you might not have met Angela before because she's been a participant over several years. And I'd like to welcome her back and let you guys have a chance to say who you are and also your community and your role. So we'll just go with the order that you joined the call for our circle. So we'll go from myself, Kelsey, Megan, and then Angela. So as everybody knows, I'm Carolyn, and I'm the learning consultant for the training program. And Angela, I might have emailed you, but Amanda, who used to help deliver the learning events, she moved on from NWTRPA. And at the moment, I don't have any more trainers, so I'm doing all of the learning events, all 19, by myself. I'm hoping to work on developing some new trainers, though. So that's a bit about me. Kelsey, could you introduce yourself? And in that way, Angela, and I know Megan's already met you, but if you could take a second to introduce yourself.
Sure. I'm Kelsey. I'm the Active Living Coordinator for RK, so I'm based in Whitehorse. I've been with RK for 6 months now, though in the field of recreation for the last 5 years, and I was one of the people to complete the pilot project when REC North first came out.
Awesome. Thanks, Kelsey. And over to you, Megan.
Hi, I'm Megan Lenny. I am the land-based coordinator for Inuvialuit Regional Corporation and also Western Arctic Beach Collective. I guess also Deschutes now too. Yeah, I live in Iqaluit Northwest Territories. And I believe that's all.
That's great. Thanks. When you said Deschutes as well, are you taking on a new role or is something merged?
So all three are merged and they co-share my pay, and then they just take me as and when as a land-based coordinator for logistics and planning.
Wow, does that make you feel like you're getting stretched in multiple directions or is it working so far?
No, it's actually really great. Like my contract really works out in the ways that they won't run programs, they'll ask me the dates that I'm already booked, and then they'll run programs based off of those dates. So, I'm really loving it, actually. It's exactly what I went to school for, and it's a lot of fun for me because I get to work in a lot of different regions and work with a lot of different people and learn a lot of different frameworks. So,
right now, awesome.
I'm very much enjoying it. Yeah. Really
fun. Oh, that's so great. Well, I'm looking forward as we connect through the future learning events, learning a bit more. I have one more quick question though. Where did you go to school and what did you specifically take at school that set you up for land-based activity coordination and delivery?
Yeah, I took adventure studies, in Kamloops, BC at Thompson Rivers University. So I have my diploma in adventure studies, essentially just like a glorified guide. And then I worked my way into my degree. I'm currently in my third year, but taking it very slowly in interdisciplinary studies in tourism in Aboriginal communities.
That is absolutely awesome. And you know what? I know the adventure studies program because my son was in it first year when COVID hit. And
you're kidding.
Yeah, I got a certificate, but the next year all the field trips were canceled and he saw no point in paying that much money. So he's at UConn now in environmental studies, but he really loved it. So it was, and the interdisciplinary degree part is awesome too.
Yeah, it's actually a really amazing program. Like the first year is just is awesome, and then the second year you get really into like the depth of everything. So it's essentially like what we're learning right now, but like a little bit more in depth. But yeah, it's a great program. I'd definitely suggest them to take the second year when they can.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thanks so much for sharing that. And Kelsey and Angela, thanks for being patient. I think it's really interesting when we hear from other people what types of learning they've done and education they've done that connects to our field, because, you know, you never know who you're going to run into who has similar interests, and then you know of something that you can send them in that direction. So thanks for your patience. Angela, would you like to introduce yourself to Kelsey and Megan? And you may know Megan, I don't know.
I'm Angela Rubin. I'm the recreation coordinator. I work under the Hamlet of Polytech. And I have a rec assistant, and I have a youth center coordinator, and I have two evening programs. We run all the big events here, any kind of events, like we have our annual baseball, and then we have our eclectic jamboree. We have Christmas, Easter, Halloween coming up soon, so we do a lot of things here, and I'm the rec coordinator for it.
So you're probably feeling a little stressed right now, too.
And then when I go home, I just recently had twins, too, so the fun starts when I go home.
And how old are they now? Because I remember Amanda was telling me you kept having to leave NWT to go and get checks in Edmonton or something.
Yes, they're 9 months and 13 days.
Four, yeah,
17
well,
days old, 9 months. Yeah.
Well, that's amazing that you're able to go to work, do all of that, and join us for the training and have enough energy when you get home to deal with twins. So.
They get older, it's easier.
I imagine you're a very strong person, so that's amazing. Thanks for sharing that. Okay, so let's look at a little bit of the content for this week then. So last week we looked at documentation that related to participating in programs and using facilities. So those were things like registration forms and informed consent forms and photo release forms. This week looks at documentation about operations. So those could be facility checklists, user agreements. They could also be, you know, Megan, you might have some ideas about how that would apply to open spaces like on the land too, because there may be some things that you need to use or prepare for going out on the land, not just inside a building. So if you remember that documentation shows that you're doing what you say you're doing, then documentation for operations might include things like job descriptions, agreements, checklists, policies, procedures, most recently probably guidelines for working through the pandemic and who can come into your facility and things like that. In our small communities, sometimes it's not necessary to have lots of paperwork, but if there's an issue, you want to make sure that it's written in writing. So one example that I heard in one small community of about 150 people was an issue of user groups leaving a community hall dirty after they'd used it, and how things weren't put clearly enough in writing. So that once that was done, that kind of resolved that concern. So I just quickly flipped through some of the content from slides 20 to 29, if you have them in front of you. I noticed, Megan, you're able to join the chat, and Kelsey. Angela, if you have a computer in front of you and are able to join the chat, that's great. If not, no worries at all, because there's just a few of us on the call. So this time I'm going to have really short questions for you. We'll have a more, so we'll go around our circle a little bit more. I just am looking for short answers when we go around, kind of like hot potato. So I don't know if you guys ever played that game when you were little, like you sort of take it and you do a quick answer and pass it quickly on to the next person. So I'll give you an example when we get to the first question. So on slide 20, if you happen to have that open in front of you, and if not, no worries, there's many types of documentation that we use for operations. And these are different than what we use for participation. So often these types of documents might be prepared, or filled out by your organization or another agency. They're not ones that your participants fill out. So they're not the registration forms and things. They're the forms that you would prepare for how you carry out your work. Slide 21 mentions some different documents that you use for employees and volunteers. You might have things like position descriptions, contracts and volunteer agreements, and those sort of formally describe the terms and conditions of a person's role within an organization or with an organization. So here's my hot potato question. What type of document is the first thing that comes to your mind that you use related to employees and or volunteers? So we'll start with Kelsey, but then next time we'll start with Megan. So Kelsey, what document do you use for employees and volunteers?
The first one that comes to mind is a criminal record check and a vulnerable sector check.
Awesome. Thank you. Megan, do you have one that you use with employees or volunteers that's not the, like, it's different to what Kelsey says?
I think the first one I would think of is a job description. Just being able to explain.
Yeah. So is that a job description for an employee, and do you do that for a volunteer as well?
No, not for volunteers, because volunteers are as and when they show up, I guess. But my job descriptions would be for people who are being paid.
Awesome, thank you. And Angela, do you have any other documents that you use with employees or volunteers besides a record check or a job description?
We have a user agreement with Bainbridge School because we use the gymnasium there. Like, you know, for every time we use it, every evening after we're done, we do our part of cleaning and stuff. And we do run into conflict because a lot of times we go into work and the school is dirty and they try to put that on us. And then try to talk about about trying to say we can't use a school at this time, and then we almost have to pull out our user agreement. We have that, and then also renewing, doing up our facility cleaning, like, you know, when we rent out our youth center to private parties for, like, we had a few weddings. There was a couple of them that left a mess, so what we kind of did was, okay, we'll put this on a list. We put, like, $20 if they leave their garbage, we have to go take it out. Like, you know, $150 total, like, you know, $40 for sweeping and mopping the floor, or, like, you know, just to get to try and keep it their end of their agreement, because they do run into conflict at times, yeah.
Those user agreements, I think, are really important. They're described on slide 29. So I think you've talked about two different things here. You talked about your joint use agreement with the school, but also your agreement or contract with people who use your facilities. So definitely both of those are really important. While we're talking about those agreements, they are definitely a type of documentation. Kelsey, do you guys have any joint use agreements or anything that comes to mind, or rental agreements or contracts? And it could be from a different job that you worked at as well, not just your current one.
Yeah, I'm not so much sure with our pay, but we did, when I worked in Tesla, we had a user agreement with the school.
Okay. So that's probably a pretty common one then. Megan, your situation's different. Do you have any joint use agreements or rental agreements or contracts the way that Kelsey and Angela just described? Do you have any that you work with or use?
Not that I know of, no.
Yeah. I thought perhaps, like, if it was maybe like a warming hut or something out on the land that somewhere in an area that different people could come and use that belong to your group. So I'm not really sure. Like, it's probably different outdoors, right? So thanks. So if you go to then the next slide, which is slide 22, so this talks about vulnerable and criminal sector trucks. So they're two different things. Usually people use them for when they're hiring staff or using volunteers. And the reason that the main importance to reason for using them is because as an organization or group, you're required to take reasonable measures to make sure you care for and protect people that are under your in your program. And that's under the duty of care concept. We'll look at that more in RM103, which is understand legal risk. And this ties into that. It's that you have a duty to care for people coming into your facilities and using your program. So just a really quick question. You can say one or the other or both. So Megan, do you use criminal record check, vulnerable sector check, or both? Or neither?
This is like an interesting one to me because I'm only hiring for like 5 days most of the time. We don't use either, actually, unless you're hired on as staff, which
okay,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Is interesting to me, but yeah.
And is that even for people that you hire back regularly?
In our programs, we try to create like economic opportunities for different people each time. So we're not required, but it's suggested that we hire someone different each time to spread out our hiring opportunities.
Right. So, yeah, if you're using the same people, it might be different. It might be easier to collect or to do a criminal or vulnerable sector check, but maybe it's challenging when you're just hiring them for 5 days. So,
yeah, I was curious about it. I'm sure we have something in place that, like, protects the participants, but I was kind of curious about it when I was thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, it might be something, there's some links at the bottom of this learning event to where you can get a bit more information, so maybe something to look into. You know, obviously if you're hiring somebody and they're doing a 5-day piece of work starting 2 days later, then you don't have time to get these in place anyway, so maybe that's part of the challenge.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. Angela, do you use criminal record checks, vulnerable sector checks, both or neither?
We use criminal record checks.
Okay, and is that with staff or with volunteers or both?
Staff mainly. We're fortunate, like in our little community, we know everybody, so volunteers are kind of really never a problem. It's just that for the records, our staff, though, we do need the criminal records check.
Right. So that's for somebody that you have a longer-term relationship with, the same way as Megan kind of just described.
Yes.
Awesome. Thanks, Angela. Kelsey, do you want to talk about which one or both or how you use these checks?
Sure. So we use both, and we use them because we have contracts with people as they run programs in their own community. So if they're running a program with youth or vulnerable people, then we do request both.
Awesome. Thank you. So, yeah, definitely RPA is different. RPA pays people to run programs or gives them an honorarium to run programs. So then that is reducing the risk on RPA, making sure that you know, the person that they're giving a contract to, right, is you sort of check out their background first. So that's great. Thanks, everybody. Some of the other documents that we use, and this is probably where most of them fall in, are policies and procedures. And I'll tell you, those two words, like trying to describe which is which and define them is challenging. So lots of people use them interchangeably or use different words. But slide 23, I've tried to give you a really simple description of what a policy is and what a procedure is. So a policy usually outlines what your guiding principles or rules are. So it's the big picture stuff. While procedures are how you carry those out. The procedures are the step-by-step piece that explains what you need to do to make sure the policy is followed. So it can be very complicated sometimes to write these, but the simpler they are, the easier they are for people to understand. So I don't know if that helps or not. I'm just curious, does anyone have an example of a policy or procedure related to COVID that you've recently had to develop or use? Let's start with Angela this time. Angela, do you guys have any new policies or procedures related to COVID and the pandemic?
Yes, we did. We had to follow policies from COVID-19, like when we held our baseball. We had 50 max people outside, and we had people coming from different communities. So every time they come in, we get two other communities in for our baseball. We read to all the participants our policies. Like, you know, they stay here, they're to clean it up, and then to follow, like, no drinking, no drugs, no mischief during their stay here in Polytech. And with the COVID-19, they stayed at the youth center, the participants. We just had to do, like, sanitizing, distancing as much as we could, like, you know, distance the tables and chairs as they're eating, and we changed groups, like, you know, so much people in at one time for dinner, and then bring the other ones back up to the baseball field to play, and then get the other crew that never ate. We had quite a few things to follow, and also we run the bottle depot, and we're following procedures. The policies for that one, too, is one person in the youth center. Like, you have to have your cans, your recyclables counted before you come in, so one person in here at a time, sanitize before you come in, sanitize, you know, they use rubber gloves and all, too, so using masks, and we have quite a few things to follow during COVID.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot. So you touched on sort of a number of policies and how they're carried out for related to COVID, but you've also touched on a couple of others that we'll talk about in a few minutes, too, like alcohol and drugs. So thank you.
Yes.
Kelsey, how about for you? Have you had to work with any new policies around COVID or procedures around that? Do you have an example?
Procedures for sure. I don't know that we've created any new policies with COVID. It was more following the government mandates. But it was, you know, masks in the office when we have meetings. And then we were very careful when we ran our fall recreation gathering, where when everyone was inside and couldn't be spaced, they had to wear a mask and that kind of stuff.
Great, thanks. And I like how you said, like, there, you know, in the Yukon, sort of these broad policies were put into place, but every organization kind of had to interpret them to a certain extent, and that was the procedure. So that's a good example of the difference between a policy and a procedure. Thank you. Megan, how about for yourself? Did you guys have to create any specific policies or procedures around related to the pandemic and maybe some of the guidelines that came down?
I feel like I feel like there's so much more policies and procedures and, like, risk management that we have to do now and put in place. It's just kind of crazy, like, programming was kind of a lot easier before COVID, and now you have to work around so many different things and get emails from so many different people and permission from so many different people. So yes, there's a lot more you got to do on my end anyway.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure all that out. I mean, Angela touched on the travel part between communities, and that's a big piece too, I think, for many different communities and what that looks like. And you know, it's hard to limit that, but you also, yeah, it seems to be different in different areas, and also what you're doing and where you're spending your time as well. So thanks, everybody. Those are good examples of sort of policy versus procedure. Some of the other examples of policies and procedures that you might want are described in slides 24 to 27. So slide 24 talks about training and certification. There is a difference between the two. So let me just ask you this question quickly. Chelsea, what do you think the difference is between training and certification?
Well, not all training will end with a certification. I think is kind of the biggest difference. So I think both are valuable, just in different ways.
Good. And Megan, what does it mean to you if you have, you know, sort of a policy or some guidelines around training and certification? What do those two different words mean to you?
What does training and certification mean to me?
Yeah, what do you see as the difference in the context of policies and procedures? Like, what might you need to document? Let me ask you this differently. So, with regards to training and certification, what documentation might you need?
I'm a little...
Okay, I know I changed my question. Sorry. I'll give you guys an opportunity for me to share what I think. So I think that sometimes when you bring in staff or volunteers, you want to describe sort of what you want them to have. So training might include an orientation to your facility, an orientation to your safety procedures. Training might be, you want to write down when you're doing some of this, what is the basic or essential training you want people to have. In the Yukon, one of the things that we've said that people working with RK, especially if they come from outside, should have is Yukon First Nations 101, so an orientation to that. Certification is different, so you might expect someone to come with a first aid certificate or a fitness instructor certificate, things like that. So training can lead to certification, but as Kelsea said, training might be different to certification. So within the context of managing risk in your organization, when you're creating job descriptions or when you have people working with you, you want to think about what is the standard or what's the basic level that you need them to be able to be at as far as training, and are there any certificates they absolutely have to have? So Megan, I'll come back to you. When you go out on the land, I think you answered this question last week. What's the minimum standard, say, for first aid that you would have for people who are leading programs out on the land?
I think considering all those who, I mean, like, there's a group that would run a program in some of my positions, and you only necessarily need one person with wilderness first aid or wilderness first responder, and then you need like a incident command person. But one thing I was thinking about, like, with the smaller programs I do, considering it's just me and then the staff, the number one I look for a cook is food safety.
Okay, so that's a certification that you would expect or hope that they would have when they come and work with you.
Yeah, I think, actually, I can't even hire anyone who doesn't even have it.
And what would be an example of training, not necessarily certification, but when people come to work with you, what type of training might you give them before they go out with a group? Like, do you have an orientation or anything like that?
This is, like, really kerfuffling my brain. I never really thought about the difference between training and certification. Like, I understand, like, training is the process to get a certification, but like this is kind of like a little bit too much for my Wednesday morning brain.
And it might settle in there, and in a week or two, you might go, maybe. So that's totally okay. I'll ask Angela. Angela, when you have a new staff person come in, is there a certain certification you require them to start working for you? Like, is there a certification they have to have before they start working for you?
It depends on the job that we're putting up there. Like, for example, for when we do the youth camping trips, like the staff that we're going to hire, we look at the applications with first aid and you know, they know online safety. And with especially with the volunteers, too, because our staff, our evening programs, we have, most of our staff have the first aid, like, you know, because we work with youth and active, like, you know, a lot of sports and stuff like that. So it all depends on the job that you're going to do, what training you need. Like, you know, I'll put it this way, our volunteers, the volunteers, you know, you're supposed to train them on a job that they're going to volunteer for. Like, you know, if you want people to feel comfortable coming in to do volunteer work, you know, I like this saying that I came across is, it's better to have a volunteer walk out rather than having a volunteer stay and not knowing, you know, what to do, because, you know, you'll make them not only feel awful, but they don't know what they're doing there. So I think to me it all depends on what kind of job you're putting up out there.
Yeah, and I love that word because we used that last week. You might remember Megan us saying it depends last week. And you're exactly right. Like, the certification that's required will depend on the position and depend on the person, and also depend on who you can actually hire in your community or bring in your community. And the training will depend on how familiar they are with what you do, their background, things like that. The most basic sort of training I can think of is Kelsey and I, when Kelsey started, we went through how to update the RK website and things like that, and how to use some of the online tools. So that was a form of training, but there was no certification attached to it. So it does depend. But it's important to recognize that if you expect a certain standard so that you can help your organization manage risk for your activities, then to put that in writing as well. Either in a job description or in your orientation practices or something like that. So that was a lot longer than a hot potato conversation. So I'm just going to go on to the next slide. So alcohol and cannabis, there's a huge area around policies and procedures here. Angela mentioned a little earlier about informing people coming into the community about the policies around what is permissible for alcohol and cannabis use and what isn't. And you as an organization may have different rules than what your territory might have. And if we went from the Yukon to NWT to Nunavut, I think, and don't quote me if I'm wrong, but I think the cannabis guidelines or what's permissible in public spaces is different from one territory to the next, and same across the provinces. So some of the things that you may need to consider if this is a topic for you are things like, are there any licensed areas? Where will consumption be allowed? Is there a process, like is a licensing meeting needed? Do you need special training for your servers? Do you need security? What are the liability insurance requirements? The liability insurance we'll talk about more, but if a group does use your facility and is serving alcohol, then the requirements or the expectation that they'll have insurance to cover anything related to that are usually a little bit higher. So that's a huge area. We could probably have a long conversation about that, but I'm just aware of the time. So I'll move on to the next slide. Travel is another big one. Especially Megan, I imagine that when you're going out on the land, you probably have policies and procedures about how people travel, who transports who, how you get to where you're going, and all those types of things. I'm just going to ask you quickly yes or no, or I don't know is also an option. I can't remember where I got to in my circle, so I'll start with Angela. Angela, do you guys have any travel policies about transporting participants or staff and volunteer travel? Just yes, no, or I don't know.
Yes.
Awesome. Kelsey?
Yes.
And Megan?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm pretty sure you guys are fairly familiar with then what this would look like. There's just a few things listed here in case, you know, you want to go back and look at what your policies are and say, oh, you know, maybe we need a trip checklist, for example. That might be something that we need. There are some, I don't know if you found it, but there are some sample forms connected to this week called documentation for operations, and in there you can find samples for these things. The next one is cold weather. I imagine you all have cold weather policies. I know that sometimes they can provide, they can be challenging because I know sometimes people say, well, we're going to go by the temperature that is on, I don't know, CBC at 9 o'clock in the morning, but maybe not everybody can look at that and maybe somebody looks at it at 10. So those cold weather ones can get complicated because our weather does change. I remember, Angela, a couple of times when you were in other learning events, you guys seemed to have pretty bad storms. And I remember there were a few times where it was like everything was shut down for 3 days, right?
Yeah, at one time for 5 days, we had a bad year, 2019, I believe.
Wow, yeah, I seem to recall that. So one of the things that you can do with your cold weather policies is make sure that if it's, you know, close to what your policy is, that you have a time or a website or a person who makes, like, task somebody with making the final call so that people aren't calling different people and getting different answers. I think that that's really important. Slide 28 introduces checklists, and checklists are awesome. I'm just wondering if you can share with me one example of a checklist that you use for your activities. So, Kelsey, do you have a checklist that you use for activities, events, trips, facilities?
I believe we do have a checklist when it comes to travel, when we're traveling to the different communities based on the time of year.
Exactly, and you do, and I may have even put it in the sample sample policies, I think I did. So,
okay.
Megan, I'm sure you have checklists too. Do you have an example of one that you would use?
I have, I have a checklist for planning.
Oh, to make sure that you cover off everything that needs to be looked after?
Yes, and also to hand it off to someone else who's looking to plan anything else.
Is that something you're able to share with us?
Yeah, I can do that, yeah.
Yeah, just in the context of this course, I won't reuse it or anything, but it's always helpful for people to see because a planning checklist is definitely very helpful, so thank you. Angela, yeah. Do you have an example of a checklist that you use? Sounds like you'd use for things like when people come into the community. Do you have another example?
Yeah, we do. We have a couple. One, when we get people coming in, we have to check. We have one person that he comes for Jamboree who's absolutely allergic to peanuts. So on the checklist, we make sure there's no peanuts around the facility that they're going to be staying in here at the youth center. For the outdoors, when we're going out, we have, you know, you have to make sure there's a first aid kit, like, you know, certain foods. We make sure we have a list, too, of, like, people who are allergic to what, and we have to work around those things like that. So it all depends like what we're doing, but then we do have, that's one of our main checklists too, is people's allergies, like, you know, because we're going to be cooking for them.
Yeah, so maybe if we're checklist or something.
Yeah, like, you know, regular, their outdoor clothes, everything needed. We go through the checklist with them. But the main thing we do have, though, is we have to know people's allergies, because in the past, not while I was working, but there was somebody who didn't know, or they didn't inform the coordinators about what they're allergic to, and so now that one's always been since I started on rec.
Yeah, so that shows the importance of using your documentation or your paperwork for participants and collecting it and then putting that information into a checklist for somebody who might be preparing your food or preparing the travel or whatever it happens to be. So it shows how those two different types of documentation can connect together. Another type of checklist that you all may have seen when you travel is, you know, you go into a bathroom like at an airport, and there's a checklist right there, and it tells you the last time the bathroom was checked and cleaned and the person's initials. So if you are responsible for facilities, like Angela, I imagine you probably have a responsibility for the facilities in your community, then you may also use checklists that, you know, around when you make sure that before you open the facility for the day or when you close it down at night. Those are other types of checklists too. People who have playgrounds in their communities, they would have a checklist that they use to check the playground equipment, and it would say how frequently as well. So you're probably wondering why all this documentation, like why we're talking about it. And I think really, if you go back to one of the earlier slides that tells you about how we manage risk, you'll remember that documentation and paperwork is one of the five key risk areas. And documentation, as we've said a few times, it shows that you're doing what you say you're doing. So if you simply say that you check your facility and you check your washroom in the morning and at night, but you don't record that, and if somebody stays in overnight, gets hurt or something like that, or whatever it happens to be, you say you do something but it's not written down and somebody gets hurt, then you are putting your organization or yourself at risk of potential negligence by not writing it down. So documentation and is a good way to cover your butt, really, because it really helps demonstrate that you're doing what you say you're doing. But as we talked about last week, you don't want to overdo it either, because too much documentation you can drown in. So you have to find the right balance and the right amount for your organization, for your programs, and all those sorts of things, and it will vary. So I just want to ask you, I know I skipped the slide about 529, about user agreements. We did sort of touch on that earlier. So I just want to ask you to wrap up the call one last thing. Is there something that you found helpful or useful in this conversation this week or last week about documentation for managing risk? Or is there something that you think you would like to know more about with regards to it? And I'll put it in the chat, but I'll also ask it one more time. Megan, if you don't mind, I think I put Kelsey on the spot last time, so I'll put you on the spot first time. Is there one thing that you found interesting, helpful, or useful in regards to documentation for managing risk? Or is there something you'd like to know more about?
I found that I feel like I need to pay attention or read more about what's covering my safety. There's a lot of documentation I go through to make sure the participants and the staff are safe, but I realize I've never read anything that ensures my safety, such as the criminal record check. So I would love to like contact a few of my managers and see what they have in place.
Yeah, and that's interesting because you also mentioned you're a contractor, right?
For some of the organization, yes.
Yeah, so that also puts you in a different position than an employee as well. And we'll dig into that a bit more when we look at liability and negligence and the different types of liability in RM 103. But definitely something that you might want to start looking at, because when you are taking people out on the land, as you know from your adventure studies program, you know, you do owe a duty of care to people, but your employer also has a responsibility to keep you safe as well. So, you know, limiting the number of hours you work, maybe making sure that the people you're working with have criminal record checks, making sure that vehicles are safe. Like, there's a variety of things. So you're right. It's interesting to kind of flip that coin over and look at it from your own perspective as a contractor or employee or volunteer as compared to the perspective of participants. Is that kind of what you mean? Thanks, Megan. Angela, for yourself, is there something, I know you jumped in a little bit late last week, but you jumped right in there and got everything done. So I'm wondering, is there one thing that you found interesting, helpful, or useful in regards to documentation for managing risk? Or is there something you'd like to know more about?
Well, we don't, like... Like you mentioned, the documentation of when you clean the washroom, we don't do things like that. But our staff every month we have a committee. We have a recreation committee of six that every month staff we report to. Like, you know, any incidents, you know, they record anything that happens. And one that's really important to us is the baseball. Our baseball form that I've been putting into last week's one, so I put that in that one's really useful in the policy. We read the policy. Those documents are very important to us because when you first get the people in here and you have them all having lunch and you read the policy to them to follow, they're all, you know, feel welcome. And we make sure we introduce our staff to so they know who to go to for whatever needs they might have. So those are important documents to us. You know, with those documents, like everything. Yeah.
So what this learning event has sort of brought to mind for you is the documents that are really important, and maybe some other areas where you might want to consider recording something or not, right? Thank you.
Yes.
Chelsea, how about yourself? Is there one thing that you found most interesting or helpful or useful in regards to documentation for managing risk, or is there something you'd like to know more about?
I found it to be a really good review of documentation of risk. It's just not something I've done a lot with in the last 6 months, so it was nice to go through and review everything.
That's great. Thanks. Okay, well, thanks so much, everybody. This wraps up our last conference call for RM 102, which is Document to Manage Risk. The next learning event, which is RM 103, Understand Legal Risk, starts on November 1st. So you've got a break for Halloween and all those Halloween activities you're planning. RM 103, it used to be 2 weeks long, but I've changed it to 4. I haven't quite finished all the changes yet, so once I have, I'll give you a little bit more of an idea. I don't think there will be 4 conference calls in there. There might be fewer, but as soon as I know what it is, I will send an email so that you have a bit better understanding of what to schedule. But for now, just sort of keep the Wednesdays at this time open for the conference calls. The reason why I extended that one, Understand Legal Risk, from 2 weeks to 4 is that the conversations around waivers and liability and insurance take a little bit more time, and people felt that there was a lot to sort of absorb in 2 weeks. So we're just going to make it run a little bit longer, but a slightly different pace each week. It won't be one conference call and one activity each week. It might be one week and one something the next week. So I look forward to seeing your posts your required learning activities for RM102. And Megan, thanks for popping yours in already for the week. I'll get back to you when I've got a couple more so that we can sort of share some comments for everybody. And I wish you all the very best for the rest of October. And Kelsey and Megan, I know I heard in your sort of "I'm doing good" kind of tone of voice, I hope that things settle down for you a little bit and you've got a bit more time to feel like you can get on top of everything that's going on. And Angela, sounds like you got lost anyway. So thanks, everyone, for joining the call. I will stay on the line if you have any questions after we stop the call recording. So, Masicho, thank you. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you.
Take care.
Have a good day. Bye.
Have a good day.